Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
How are you now? How are you right now? Folks, hello and welcome to episode 49 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast presented by Habs Eyes on the Prize. I am Matt Drake and we are here to talk about your Montreal Canadiens taking a little visit over to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to take on the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sorry, I think I'm getting sick again, so I might be losing my voice throughout the course of this podcast, but we'll see how it goes. The Pittsburgh Penguins are apparently mired in a very tight playoff race. At least that's what Sportsnet wants you to think. Watching the pregame for this, they kept talking about how the Penguins are in this playoff chase and that they need the points for this and that. And I'm like, well, aren't they almost in the same position as the Montreal Canadiens in the standings, just in a different division? And I had to go and double check that, right? And so before the game, I went and had a look. And turns out, yeah, going into this game, the Penguins were precisely 2 points ahead of the Montreal Canadiens in the standings. And nobody talks about the Habs as if they're in a playoff race. So why is it such a race for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Well, part of it is because the Metropolitan Division, their top three teams, like the third place team right now in the Metro is the Flyers, and they only have 56 points. Third place team in the Atlantic Division is the Lightning, and they got 59 points. You know, it's the Atlantic Division is considerably stronger, so I guess, you know, being right around where the Habs are in terms of points somehow gets you consideration as being in a playoff race, but I don't know. It kind of felt like they were trying to sell me on something that really doesn't fucking exist right now. But anyways, that wasn't the story of the game. The story of the game right off the jump was Lars Eller playing in his 1,000th game, which just made me feel old. Of course, Lars Eller used to play for the Montreal Canadiens. I saw a lot of those games. You know, he played over 400 games for the Habs and was a big fan of his in Montreal. So it's kind of nice to see him get his silver stick, his 1,000th game in the NHL. It's a big milestone. Not a lot of players can get there. And he did. And he's got a cup as well. Unfortunate that none of that could come with him in Montreal. But I digress. We are here to talk about the game. I'm going to get to the recap and everything that happened in there. But first, it is playoff time and the road to Vegas and the Super Bowl goes through San Francisco and Baltimore. We're going to find that out tomorrow. BetOnline is your number one source for playoff football odds, stats, trends, and lines with everything from point spreads to hundreds of player performance props. Head to BetOnline today to stay updated on all the action. BetOnline, the game starts here. And this game between the Montreal Canadiens and the Pittsburgh Penguins started, I would say not bad for the Montreal Canadiens, not great. But it's kind of, they're going back and forth a little bit. And it doesn't take long, though, for the Habs to start looking like they're the ones on their back foot constantly. Jordan Harris takes a tripping penalty near the midway point. They manage to kill it off, but the shots are 12-3, according to the shot clock, anyways, in favor of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And we're talking about 10 minutes into the game. So not going super well in the first half, but they start to get better from there. Gradually throughout that period, they're getting better and better. More production from the defense ends up making the difference for the Habs. Mike Matheson gets the puck up at the point. He looks down at the side of the net and he spots Caden Gooley, puts a perfect pass across the ice, down the seam, and Caden Gooley gets it, puts it in. 1-0 for your Montreal Canadiens. That's your score at the end of 20 minutes. Again, they got a lot better as that period went on, and hopefully they can carry that into the second period. You know, they're going in there with a one-goal lead. But a few minutes into the second, the shots are actually 13-12 in favor of Pittsburgh. So it seems like ever since that power play, they've got what? One shot on goal. They were up apparently 12-3. I don't know if they took away shots in the intermission. Justin Blades in the EOTP chat was saying that like he saw 16 on the clock at some point at the end of the first period. But shots are at 13-12, so the Habs, they really crawled their way back into this one. But of course, it's the next shot for the Penguins that ends up hurting you. It's always the next shot that you got to be worried about, not the ones that you've already allowed. And this time it's Mike Matheson. He blocks a shot with his skate, but he kicks it right back into the slot. And guess who's there? Mr. 1000, Lars Eller. One times it past Jake Allen, and it's 1-1. Now we're in a game, though, and it looks like two teams that are in roughly the same place in the standings, even though Sportsnet wants to convince you that one of them is in a playoff race and the other one is not. They look pretty evenly matched, but then Chris Letang takes an interference penalty, and this is a big opportunity for the Habs to pull away, and they do. Juraj Slafkovský gets the puck at the side of the net. He's trying to go across ice to the back door for Cole Caulfield, and Caulfield's right there with a stick on the ice ready for it, but it banks off Adam Graves and into the net. So Slafkovský gets the goal, and it's 2-1 for your Montreal Canadiens. Now, with 2 minutes and about 2 minutes and 16 seconds left on the clock, Caden Gooley takes a tripping penalty, and this was the best I've seen the Penguins' power play look in a very long time. I've watched a few of their games this season. They're not very good at the power play. I don't know why, but it's been a struggle for them, and they looked very good on this one, but they just couldn't beat Jake Allen, and the Habs go into the third period with a one-goal lead. And it's just a one-goal lead, not a two or a three, because we know what happens. They stop playing. So luckily, they're able to keep playing because it's only a one-goal lead. But it's, you know, not fantastic. Like, the Penguins are still... You could tell the Habs aren't... There's not an urgency for them to do anything offensively. And the result of that, of course, is that somebody like Sidney Crosby is going to eventually go out there and do something. And he does. He gets the puck right around the faceoff dot, a little bit past midway in the period, does just a ridiculous no-look spinning backhand feed right to the back door, and it's Jake Guentzel there to put it in. I mean, there's a few things you could say about that goal. One, it's just a ridiculous play by one of the best players to ever lace up a pair of skates in Sidney Crosby. But number two, Jake Guentzel, the one who was supposed to be covering him, was Josh Anderson, and Josh Anderson lost his man, and it was a night where Josh Anderson lost his man a lot. I will put a pin in that. We're going to talk about that at the end of the recap, but no matter how you slice it, it ties the game up at two. The Penguins were the more threatening team from there on out, but nobody could score. And so we go to 3-on-3, and in the 3-on-3 overtime, man, Juraj Slafkovský had a beautiful individual effort where he kind of cut through everybody and went all the way down to the net and just couldn't get it in. And then the puck ends up going the other way. Marcus Pettersson, he's on a 2-on-1. He keeps and shoots, rips it past Jake Allen, and the Penguins get a 3-2 overtime win on home ice. Look, that wasn't a bad game. You guys have anybody who's been following this podcast, you've heard lately, I've gotten pretty upset after some of those losses. This isn't one of them. I think they played well. I have no problem with them losing if they actually are competitive with the other team, and that's precisely what they were with the Penguins here. So I'm not going to get angry about them losing. It's fine for them to lose that game. Now, that being said, the first thing I want to talk about, to get it out of the way, the negative thing, is Josh Anderson on the top line. It's not an option. It's not a fucking option, and it needs to stop. He looks absolutely brutal out there, and I know some people have already come at me about this. Say, well, they're showcasing him. They want to try to trade him. If that's what they're doing, it's having the polar opposite effect. It is shining a bright light on every single weak aspect of his game for all other teams, all other scouts to see anytime they watch the Montreal Canadiens. If he has any trade value remaining, you are squandering whatever is left by putting him on that line and making it so obvious how bad he is right now. It's not an option. It has to stop. I don't give a shit. If you want to put Slafkovský back there, great. I would love to see that. But you take anybody else from the lineup and put them there, and I would rather see it than Josh Anderson. He's absolutely brutal in that spot. He makes that line worse. He makes Suzuki worse. He makes Caulfield worse, and he makes himself worse on that line. The best thing that they can do is put him down on, you know, the third line, hope that against lesser competition he can put up some points, and hope that those points are enough for you to convince another team, well, hey, yeah, he's on our third line, but we did that on purpose because we wanted to get him going offensively, and look what it did. And then maybe you can get a trade for him, because it's clearly not an option to have him on the top line anymore. Absolutely brutal. I mean, Jake Guentzel is a good player, but you can't just lose him like that in the offensive zone, have him cut to the net, and you're standing behind him while he taps one in on the back door. Like, again, it was a beautiful play by Sidney Crosby. And sometimes you just got to tip your cap to one of the best players to ever do it. But it doesn't happen if Josh Anderson actually keeps to his man and is able to lift that stick. That puck just goes right through everybody and goes into the corner, and we go, wow, that was a nice pass attempt by Sidney Crosby, instead of going, oh, the game's tied and now we got to go to overtime, and then we end up losing. So again, not upset about the loss, right? This is a game that it's totally fine for them to lose, and if they want to lose it that way in overtime, that's fine. There's nothing particularly offensive about the way that they lost, but Josh Anderson on the top line, there's a lot that's offensive about that, and it has to stop. It is not an option anymore. Please stop it. I'm going to stop talking about that now, take my own advice about please stop it, because otherwise I'm going to get upset. And we need to move on, talk about something positive. So we'll go to your silver lining of the night, which I think anybody who watched that game is not going to be surprised to hear the name that's going to come out of my mouth. It's Juraj Slafkovský. He was absolutely excellent in that game. The one positive thing, I guess, about Josh Anderson getting put back on the top line is that we've learned that Juraj Slafkovský can still be a very effective player, even when he's not with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. We know how effective he's been on that top line, but the question was always, well, if we take him away from there, is he going to maintain any of that effectiveness? Because the only other time that we saw him really be effective this season was when he was on Kirby Dach's line, and that was a very small sample. So you start to wonder, is he a passenger? Does he need other players to get himself going? Well, the last couple of games, he's been on line with Sean Monahan and Yoel Armia. Yoel Armia, a guy who's been basically oscillated back and forth from the AHL this season, and Sean Monahan, a guy who's probably not going to be with the team very much longer. I mean, the proof's in the pudding. Juraj Slafkovský is a play driver. He's able to elevate other lines. So you're not married to the idea of him playing with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield. He doesn't have to be there to be successful. I think he probably should be there, because right now I think it's best for the team in its current form. But the great news is that you've got data now where you can say, hey, look, the way that this guy is playing, it's elevating other players as well. Not just him having success with the two best players on the team. You could actually build a line around him by himself, find some other players that go well with him, and potentially you have a completely different look on the top line. Maybe Joshua Huad gets a shot there with Nick and Cole at some point. Who knows who else? Like, it opens up a lot of possibilities when you know that he is capable of driving a line on his own, and that's what he's looking like right now. That near goal in overtime was absolutely beautiful. He was on the power play trying to be unselfish and trying to, you know, throw that puck over to Cole Caulfield, but it ends up in the net anyways. Sometimes when you're making good plays, the puck just ends up in the net for you, and that was one of them. He almost had another goal in the third period as well. Just an absolutely beautiful game from him, and I don't have any other words on it, really. It's just so comforting to know that he can have success away from the two best players on the team, so they don't need to do that, but I still think they should probably go back to it sooner than later, because I'd rather be seeing that at the moment. Look, outside of that, what else could I even say about that game? I mean, there's no complaints, but also nobody really jumped off the page in terms of having a fantastic outing. I would argue Jake Allen was quite good in that game. I think there's constant trade rumors around him, and I've never been able to pin down what is his value. We know the Leafs allegedly offered a sixth round pick, and the Habs want more. I don't know what else we can really say. It's at this point, he seems to be too up and down to really get any interest from a team that's pushing for a Stanley Cup, but I guess we'll see. Games like that will go a long way to making him a little bit more viable in a trade conversation. You know, it's always, what have you done for me lately? And what he's done for you lately was a pretty solid game against the Penguins. Could not charge a single one of those goals to him in that game. So you got to give him some credit there. He did everything he could to give them a chance and get them into that overtime period. I also thought Sean Monahan played pretty well. His trade value has been doing nothing but going up for the last couple of weeks. He's been playing great hockey. He's staying healthy. I would be shocked if they don't figure out a way to get another first-round pick out of him before the end of the trade deadline, or the end of the trade deadline, before the trade deadline in general. I really think that they will, and I think it's going to be it's going to end up being a masterclass by Kent Hughes that he already got a first-round pick just to take the guy, and he's going to get another one. So good news on that front. Yoel Armia played another good game. It's hard to see any trades happening with him because of that contract, but it's also at the same time nice to see him playing good hockey. It's been tough. He's not had a good go with the Habs in the last year and a half, and lately he's been playing quite good. I was one of the first people to start yelling about sending him down to Laval in the first place. But now, like, I mean, as much as I would like to see some younger players come up and play some minutes, I don't think that you really have an argument to send him anywhere because he's playing extremely capable NHL quality hockey, and you need that on your team. You need that. You don't want to get embarrassed every night, and he's helping that not happen. So, kudos to Yoel Armia. He's kind of making me eat my words a little bit on his play. That's all I really got on that particular game. Again, really not a bad game, not a great one, not a bad one, nothing to be upset about. They lost, and losing is fine this season, so not a whole lot for us to go over. I guess the last thing that I want to talk about, because I don't know if we're going to do a full absent-minded episode tomorrow or not, we may not, we may have one soon either way, but is the Brendan Gallagher suspension. We talked about this after last game. He had a gutless hit on Adam Pellick. Absolutely deserved to be suspended, and they decided to do a phone hearing instead of an in-person hearing. So the maximum he was going to get was 5 games, and that's precisely what they gave him, was 5 games. I don't really know how I feel about that. I think 5 is appropriate. However, with the way that hit went down, the fact that there was no real legitimate hockey purpose to throwing your elbow backwards like that, I feel like everybody who's been saying it should be more, it should be closer to 10 games, they're not wrong. They're not wrong. It's the kind of play that you need to get out of the game. You need to send a clear message to players that, listen, if you do this, it's going to hurt your wallet. We know what the maximum fine is under the CBA. It's like $5,000, which that's like fining me $50. I don't give a shit. $50 is not going to stop me from, like, if you tell me something that I feel like doing, it's going to cost me $50 to do it. I'll give you the $50 all day long. I don't give a fuck. It's certainly the fact that I might have to pay $50 is not going to stop me from doing it. And that's $5,000 to NHL players. They don't care about $5,000. That's a fart in the fucking wind for them. And this is why suspensions are a lot more costly, because, of course, that is coming directly out of their salary. So if they extended something like that to 10 games, it would send a very clear message to people in the NHL. Listen, you're doing a flyby like that, you better get your shoulder down and try to hit the guy in the chest. Because if you throw your elbow up or back the way that Gallagher did and you catch somebody in the face, it's going to be 10 games every time. But then on the flip side of that coin, what if they gave Gallagher 10 games? The problem with the NHL has never really necessarily been, or at least has never only been, the length of the suspensions that they give. It's been the consistency or complete and utter lack thereof. So if they did give Brendan Gallagher 10 games for that hit, and then somebody else did the exact same hit 3 games later, and that guy only gets 5, all of a sudden we would go, okay, so what? Are the suspensions, you know, shortening in length? That doesn't make any sense. I thought the whole point of this deterrent was to make sure people understood, don't do that. It's going to get worse and worse and worse for you. So, again, to go a big roundabout way to get back to, was 5 games enough or not? I think it was appropriate, because with a phone hearing, it was the most that they could give him. So I went, all right, you gave him the most that you could based on what you chose. Now, it was also up to you to choose the other hearing, though. And that's where my problem comes in with the NHL in general, is that before we can really harp on the amount of games, we need to see consistency. So the next person who does a hit like that, this is where we could really start to judge if they are starting to become more consistent or not. The next time we see a hit like that, and I hope we don't, honestly, but the next time we see something like that, if it's somebody with no history, like Gallagher, he had no history going into this, then we should see another 5-game suspension. If it's someone with history, then we should be starting to talk about 8 to 10. Now, if that doesn't happen, believe me, I won't be the only one, but we're going to have an article about that, and we're going to start discussing it. We're going to start taking a look at what the fuck is this league actually doing from a discipline standpoint, because, again, you look at Gallagher, 5 games, is it enough? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it should have been 10, but really what they need to establish is consistency more than anything. So I'm going to stop talking about that now, too, because now I feel like I'm starting to repeat myself. Look, they got to do without Gallagher for 5 games, and we'll see how they do. That's one loss in overtime, and got to keep on keeping on and see what they can do in the future games. So, what are we running? A little over 19 minutes, so c'est une grosse soirée pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. Thank you, as always, for listening. This episode was brought to you by BetOnline, and of course, à la prochaine.